Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. And hour two, Rich Migliori will join us momentarily, as soon as Casey raises him. And speaking, I just heard the Pennsylvania bred story and got a mention. Stake today, $100,000. Princess of Sylmar, the also known as the Eddie Stanko. The Eddie Stanko, Princess of Sylmar today, goes as race seven, 4/12 post, goes as the seventh race. And a nice full field of eight, and tomorrow they'll run the boys' version. Both of these are a mile and 70 on the Tapita, and tomorrow the hard spun for the same kind of field, group of eight. Today, and I should mention, yeah, I mentioned that, you know, we were with Will Schwartz and Drew and his son and Johnny D and John Service because of Leader of the Bands try in the Molly Pitcher. And as we discussed last week, Monmouth's a place. Listen, it's true, not just in Monmouth. But, you know, the fact that she came in and ran so well last year in that Monmouth Oaks and also on a wet track there, so, you know, both dry and wet, Leader of the Band felt like the right, you know, price with Search results. And Search ran well. I also, there's also a topic we got to discuss at some point during the week, and you know, it's not a rush. In fact, Hammer and I talked about this a little bit, which is the, you know, the Lasix on, Lasix off. And if you saw what I wrote on Saturday with the analysis, you know, there were a couple of races specifically. In fact, I forgot to ask Bruce. Stupid. I forgot to ask Bruce about the Lasix issue. Ugh, how could I forget that? With Robin Sparkles. because you had a number of horses coming off and on, and in particular, you know, Search Results was first Lasix, and then you had Army Wife. She was 3-for-3 on the Lasix front, and then there was Penny Baker, who was getting back on Lasix after, you know, that first performance, and then came off of it in the Chicago and didn't run well. So I, you know, this is one of those decision-making quandaries that we're dealing with here, with you know, the horses on and off. So anyway, had a wonderful time. And thanks to Will Schwartz for having us, Tina and I, and we had a really fun day up in the Turf Club, and his filly ran great, and they were thrilled. In fact, Chad was sitting, you know, next to us, and so everybody left the boxes happy. Chad was thrilled, and I, like I said earlier, Search Results' effort in that Molly Pitcher should be examined. She was fabulous in there, and Will was and John Service were delighted to get another graded placing for her as a four-year-old for leader of the band. And Will involved today, and John with Midnight Obsession, 4-1. Antonio Gallardo aboard, shipping out to Erie. Your favorite is that Maldives model, Erin McClellan. And I think Erin did she win a? Was it Erin McClellan that won a? No, we'll get back to that. I thought I saw something that Erin won. She wins, you know, she wins plenty. But Maldives model coming over from Penn. 3-1 favorite. Actually, Tactical Pajamas, Ron Potts, is 5-2. So, but is stretching out. Is going to try a route in here. So, you know, feels like the early pace setter. There's decent pace. Lovely Ever After inside from Tim Gurton. Tim's also got One More Kelly, the Warriors Reward people. Not This Time, Philly. 6-1. She likes to be on or near. So, good group for the Princess of Sylmar and then the Hardspun tomorrow. There's also the New York Oaks at Finger Lakes today. Rich Migliori is standing by. Meg, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Coming to you from the Virginia countryside. Not a Colonial yet. Colonial tomorrow. Right now we're at Keswick Hall near Charlottesville.
Nice. Yeah, listen, you're a globetrotter. I love it's like playing Where's Waldo? Where's Steve?
Lately, yes. And it is going to be another goofy, it's going to be kind of a funny weekend because we're going to be running around. But we were, you know, we were at Monmouth and had an unbelievable day for Haskell and enjoyed the 3 days at Monmouth broadcasting and taking in the action. We had an eye on Saratoga. Didn't get much watched yesterday. I was trying to catch up this morning, and I did see the stake, of course, Clarier's huge performance, but I just talked to Bruce Brown earlier, Rich, and celebrated his first graded stake win as a trainer. Another, you know, another good weekend and the first full week of action at the spot.
Yeah, no, it was terrific. Great racing all the way through. Thrilled for Bruce Brown. You know, I think the world of the guy. Horses always look good. You know, trainer can only make his horses run as fast as they're capable of running. And, you know, living proof, once again, speed is always dangerous, right? She was getting a little desperate late, but, you know, I was yelling slide because I was rooting for Bruce. But a real nice performance from her. And honestly, kind of a roughly run race if you go back and watch it. You know, a lot to dissect going on in there. That's one of those races you need to watch the replay probably. You know, as many horses are in the races, as many times you got to watch that replay.
Well, and it's funny because a lot of times in those turf sprints, the field will kind of spread out. and, you know, thereby giving everybody a chance to maneuver how they, you know, how they want. This was a case, and Bruce even said it, you know, when you have a Robin Sparkles, you don't have to worry about what's going on behind you, really, until maybe they come calling.
Well, exactly. But, you know, when the favorite, Caravelle, got left,
yeah.
And then, you know, Tyler's trying to rush up to get his position, and Johnny Velasquez was not yielding a little bit. He was going to hold that line, and there just wasn't enough room for him to you know, kind of get up in there. And finally, you could see it was, the jam was coming. You know, think roller derby, right? And he wound up having to, you know, steady out of there, and it kind of bunched up behind him, too. So, you know, to me, there was a lot of interesting race riding going on in there. But that's one of the things that really impresses me about Johnny. You know, at this stage of his career, you know, guy's done pretty much everything there is to do, right? He still rides with that enthusiasm, with that hunger. You know, you wouldn't even blame him if, you know, it's kind of a rough spot, maybe I'll be the one to get out of here. Nah, he's still 100%, you know, none of his skills have deteriorated. I guess that's the best way I can put it.
And it is notable, especially when you think about a point not that long ago, really, Rich, that I think, you know, people were murmuring, well, it feels like Johnny's kind of winding down. Then came, you know, I don't want to lay this at the feet exclusively the jock's agent scenario and storyline, but it does feel like, you know, Johnny, you know, kind of born again hard with the change in books.
You know, listen, I understand what you're saying, and listen, I think Angel is tremendous. Angel Cordero, Johnny's former agent, in so many ways. But
sure,
much like Angel was as a jockey, he was as a jockey's agent. Angel didn't take races off as a rider. He rode, whether it was a $25,000 maiden or a grade one, with the same ferocity, the same enthusiasm. And in general, that era of riders rode. You know, they didn't manage their careers. They rode as many as they could ride. And Johnny reached a point in his career where, you know, and it happens to all riders, that, you know, you're just not going to be as good riding the entire card. You get tired, you get a little sour, your body isn't going to be able to do the things you did when you were younger. So Johnny, I think for a long time, was trying to get it through to Angel that, hey, Angel, I'd rather ride 3, 4, if we have to ride 5, you know, a big day more. But Johnny, I think, needed to be managed a little bit more, and Angel never could quite grasp that. You know, so when the overnight would come out and Johnny would be on 9 or 10, he wasn't happy about it. Where Ron managed Jerry Bailey's career that way, you know, through the last part of his career, and probably gave him longevity. You look at Mike Smith, has been able to continue because he doesn't ride everyday races every day. You know, he's selective. You know, I was never selective. I think my career would add more longevity. I got hurt on horses I shouldn't have rode, you know. But it wasn't in our DNA, our makeup, because that's, you know, when you came around, Hall of Famers were going to ride your $25,000 maidens and cut your throat to beat you, you know. It's just a little different now. And this is no judgment on Johnny, no judgment on Angel. I just don't think they could get together on the philosophy on how to approach Johnny's, you know, back nine, if you will, or you know, latter part of his career. And, you know, Ron is a guy that is very good at that. Ron Anderson's the only agent I ever had. When he had my book in California, pick up an overnight, I'm on a horse, you know, 20-1 morning line. He came to the jockey's room to explain to me why he put me on that horse. I never had an agent explain to me why they put me on a horse in my entire career. Huh. And I wasn't going to question it. You know, sure, I'll ride him. And he told me the horse was, you know, really fit on the numbers, was kind of hidden. It was for a guy that didn't win very much. Well, the horse won, paid like $40, you know. But it's just a different approach. You know, like Angel goes to Saratoga, still wanting his rider to be leading rider, like he always wanted to be leading rider there. That wasn't important to Johnny anymore. So I think that was where they just had different philosophies on the approach. And, you know, I'm sure it was hurtful to Angel because he loves Johnny like a son. To this moment, he'll tell you that. But I just don't think that they communicated to that point where Angel said, okay, you're right. You know what? Let's just be more selective in your mounts. But that wasn't Angel as a rider. Angel rode. Again, all athletes evolve and things modify and change. You know, in the 70s and 80s, you wanted to ride every race. Now, even younger riders are at a point where they go, well, gosh, I got to ride nine. Hey, how about the day, Steve, I rode nine at Aqueduct, nine at Meadowlands, and I worked 12 horses that morning. That's 30 horses in one day.
Your makeup, look, you had blood dripping from the fangs every minute. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but, you know, I just think it's a different approach. And honestly, looking back on it, I should have probably been a little bit more intelligent in my approach. I go down this rabbit hole preparing for the shows. And I'm going to go on a little rant about that in a little while. But preparing to do the shows, I'll click on, you know, I'll be on the Formulator and I'll click on the horses, the pedigree, the dam. Oh, wow, I rode this horse's dam, and I'll go to Equibase, and I'll plug the dam in, and it could be from, you know, 20 years ago, right? And then I'll click on that whole day's card, let's say Saratoga, 10-race card, and I'll just go through every race. And you know how many times I rode the entire freaking card? Now, this is a guy who used to pull 4 or 5 pounds every day, living on 700 calories a day. You know, I'm 145 pounds, me trying to be 112. And I would be, okay, here's a horse, 10 to 1. Oh, but I ride for Richie O'Connell. He's my guy. I ride anything for him. Oh, here's a horse, 3 to 1, 5 to 1, 6 to 1. Who's this horse? Went off 55 to 1. All right. Somebody I can't even remember, and the horse ran last time at Rockingham. Like, I had agents that would literally just, oh, he's open, put him on. Why wouldn't it, you know, you think to say, well, you know, this guy is working horses till 10, then he's in the hot box from 10 till 12, and then he's, you know, maybe I can give him a race off here and there. And it bugs me now. I was so dumb then. I'll ride him. And by the time we got to the gate, I'm figured out, you know, 50 ways we can win and then ultimately be disappointed if, you know, a 50 to 1 shot didn't, you know, come in. And, you know, I just wish that I had been more thoughtful and I had, you know, agents at different periods that had been more thoughtful.
Out of curiosity, how much, Rich, of it, of that scenario, would you account for the stretches you missed from serious injury and trying to maximize? I mean, how much awareness or concern was there that, you know, I don't know how long the clock is going to tick on me, you know, health-wise. And you know, talk about that in terms of how riders think to maximize, or at least in that era. Because now it seems that, you know, when we've seen what transpired with Smith and with Gary Stevens and even a guy like Perry Oates and so forth, guys that are, you know, riding into their 50s, John Court, you know, it seems like there's a much greater awareness of lifestyle choices and health maintenance, et cetera, you know, spreading careers and career longevity. But I'm just curious because you missed so many stretches of prime earning power and years.
Well, you know, it's true. I mean, you know, I had a lot of injuries, Steve, that I was out more than 6 months. You know, like a lot of times a rider, you know, break a collarbone, you're out 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months is a long stretch. There were 4 different stretches I was out over 6 months at a time. And then it's like completely starting over. You have relationships with people that are going to step in and give you a hand, but you're also not going to get them all back. You've got to kind of, you know, work your way back into the rotation full time again. Thankfully, I was always fortunate. I had people that, you know, would put me on live horses right away, because the last thing, the worst thing that could happen to a rider coming back off injury is to not win right away. Go 2 weeks without winning after you've been off 6 months, and they're throwing dirt on you. You know, you're done. You're 6 feet under. He's afraid is the big one. When people love to throw that around, the guy's got no heart. They don't even understand what real heart is, and they'll bandy that about. And then, physically he's just not right. He's still hurt. He can't, it's amazing how people come out of the woodwork. They just can't wait to start throwing dirt on you with the shovel. But yeah, Steve, from the time I was very young, I had people telling me that I wasn't going to be able to ride because I was going to be too big. I mean, the first farm I was ever at, there was five kids galloping horses there, and I was the fifth pick. You know, I was like, the kid chosen last for stickball. they were, my best friend David Figueroa was in front of me in the draft pick, and David got to win three races, but he got too big, and he was a terrific rider. There was a kid there named Dominic. He was a little older than all of us. And Frank Labaceta Sr. took him to Aqueduct. He came out to watch some of his horses train out there in Yaphank, Bill George's farm, and said, this kid he needs to be at the track. Took him, and he went and rode a few races. And then 2 years later, he became a pony boy. He was taking me to the gate the year I won the Eclipse Award. Billy Anton Georgi was there. His son still rides out in Northern California. He was the draft pick in front of me. He had a decent career, but up at Finger Lakes. So my point is from that period of time, people were telling me, you're going to be too tall. You probably be a good exercise rider. Went to the track. Steve DeMauro had one bug boy in front of me, Gordon Whitaker, whose two sons ride in Maryland and Charlestown. And everybody was telling me then, you're going to be too big. Then I got to ride, and my first valet, Billy Gilbert, he had Robbie Davis in me. And he's telling me, you better save your money. You won't be riding in a year or two. And he pointed at Robbie. He said, but him, he's a race rider. He'll be around for a long time. So you had all these people telling you negative things. Lenny Goodman telling me I'd be a bricklayer, right? So I always felt like I had to prove myself, that I couldn't turn down a mount, that I couldn't pass something up, because there was this subconscious thing that was instilled in me by all these people that were, telling me what I couldn't do, that I might not be able to do it. So I couldn't, pass up a mount. I couldn't pass up an opportunity. I was going to, do my best to ride as many as I could. And, it's one of those things that I think probably low self-esteem. I didn't come from a racing background. I came from a family in Brooklyn, that my father liked to bet on the races. So there was always, I think, a little bit of it. Now, listen, I'm mature now. Psychologically, intellectually, I can look at it and go, I just never felt like I was worthy of it. So I had a ride. And then fold into this, even as, 14 years old, galloping horses, apprentice in training for Steve, I would set everybody's tack before 5 a.m. And then I would go to the Frenchman's kitchen and be waiting on line for the Frenchman's to open. I was always the first one in the kitchen. And I would have coffee with these people. I grew up on the track. So, I got hurt really bad on a filly for a guy that had four horses. And he asked me in the track kitchen, because the guy that I had coffee with for 15 years, my filly ran fourth last time. I can't get a good rider. I know I can win a race with her if you ride her. Of course I'll ride her. Told my agent, got to ride a horse for this guy. Yeah, but you don't win. She's going to be 10-1. I said, yeah, but now I got to ride him. And this guy and me, I go back a long way, and he needs this. She flipped over and landed on top of me, broke my pelvis, my ribs. But how do you turn somebody down like that? Yeah. You can't. And I've had this conversation with Carmella, because I have some regrets about some of that stuff. And she said, but that's what made you you, and that's why people cared for you. That's why people liked you. They knew that you were going to ride for them with that kind of heart and desire to win for them. And you know, maybe make their life a little better too. So, you know, I guess that is just who I was. I couldn't change my, you know, a leopard can't change their spots, right?
No, and it's very hard. It's funny. And I'm sure people listening can make the same parallel, you know, to whatever, you know, career application or personal tie that, you know, that equates. I mean, being, you talk about being prepared. You mentioned what you do to get ready for the shows, for instance. It's that same, you know, the certain dedication and focus and drive. I mean, Tina, I'll crawl out of bed at 4 o'clock, and she's like, "Are you coming back to bed?" I said, "No, I've got work to do." And whether it's before the show or whether it's, you know, when it comes to writing up the races, particularly on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a little easier Saturday, Sunday, but if you have a certain focus and approach, it's tough to break out of it.
Well, and taking pride in anything you I do, I want to do well. I don't want to, you know, mail it in. I want to, you know, bring it to the best of my ability. You know, and here's, like, let's factor in another thing, and then I'll give you a little bit of a humorous story. You know, grow up hungry. Grow up where, you know, you're not guaranteed to have dinner every night. You know, some nights it's pancake dinner because that's the only thing that you know your mother could put together, and at least you won't go to bed with an empty belly, right? Hmm. When you get an opportunity to start doing something that you crave to do, and I crave to be a race rider from the time I was sub, not be a jockey, be a race rider, and watched it and studied it, and now I get a chance to do it, you're going to hang on to it for dear life. I wanted to do it, and then it was never lost to me. I was getting to do it. And knowing what it's like to be hungry and not, you know, go to school with I was the fourth brother in line from your oldest brother's hand-me-downs. I'll never forget the girl, Kelly Fritch, making fun of me because I had holes in the knees of my jeans going to school. Well, that's what I had. And I could still remember her name. So think about the impact that has on a little kid, right? I never kind of lost that. And that's why I go back to, like, I treated my career much more blue collar than it was. I felt like if I didn't get out and work in the morning, I was going to lose it. I never could relax. I never enjoyed it as much as I probably should have. If I didn't get to the track by a certain time, I felt like I was neglecting my career. There were no days off for me, but because that was so ingrained in me, Steve, I was going to hang on to it for dear life. And that's why it was so hard when I had to let it go. I mean, people don't realize for a year, I was as depressed and in as dark a place as I've ever gone in my life where, and again, I'm ashamed to say this now because I really felt like I lost my identity. Who the hell am I now? But in fact, my identity, being a father, a husband, a friend, a brother, you know, that's your true identity. But start training to do something. Start dreaming about doing something when you're 10. Start really training to do it when you're 12. And then do it for the next 29 years. And then it's done. It's not an easy place to be. I'm blessed. I mean, people have given me wonderful opportunities to stay in the game, to talk about the game. That's why I take educating people so serious. I'm not a handicapper. I really should just pick the horses I would like to ride, but I've gotten caught up a little bit in trying to find value or maybe it's, yeah, man, that 6-1 shot would be better than that 8-5 shot because of this, and this, because I've become more aware of how people look at it and getting value and approaching the gambling side of it. I'm not a handicapper. My strength is analyzing. My strength is maybe opening up your eyes or your mind to looking at something from a different perspective. You know, saying something that, you know, people go, wow, I never thought of it like that. That's the joy of it for me, trying to be an educator. That was why I loved teaching the Apprentice Jockey Program at NYRA for the 3 years I did it so much, because when I could say something to a kid and I could see that light bulb go off and go, wow, I never thought of it like that. And then they ride better because of something, some little thing that I put in their mind to approach something differently. You know, that's the joy in it, the wonderful thing. But the rant is that, you know, I should stay off of social media anyway, but people knocking the broadcast and how, oh, they don't have a clue. Not just me in particular, although I was lumped in this particular conversation. I would love to see any one of those people do a half hour of live television with someone in their ear, a producer and a director, and counting you down the commercials or telling you got to throw here while you're speaking, while you're trying to make pertinent facts, trying to give good information, and all the moving parts, particularly with a show like Saratoga Live, we could have five or six people on one telecast, and you've got to keep the ball moving. You can't just hang on to the ball the whole time. I would like to see him do a half hour, let alone I did 3.5 hours on Saturday. You know, so it just cracks me up. And then the preparation that goes into, you know, getting, you know, yourself, so you're so comfortable and well-versed with what's going on. So when you sit down, you're confident. You know that you can handle it. Having the conversations with your hosts, with Lafitte Pink Eye, with Greg Wolf, hey, which direction should we go here? Should we talk about this? And then having them tee you up. It's like spiking the ball in volleyball, right? They're the set man, and then you come spike over the top because they've set you up so well. There's so many moving parts. And that's why I laugh when you start reading some of the stuff that people write. They have no idea of what goes into it and the intensity involved in it.
I actually mentioned earlier, or going to the break, about the response to the tractor failing to start yesterday, and you know somebody has to make an outrider has got to make an immediate decision to ride up the stretch and warn the riders to pull up. And
yeah.
The second tractor ended up, getting there just wasn't enough margin for error. And my favorite was, well, this would never happen at blank racetrack or at this. What are you talking about? A tractor not starting? You got to be kidding. You cannot, the situation that happened the other day with the taking the races off turf, I mean, that's a fiasco and a irksome nightmare every time it happens anywhere. This is a mechanical mishap.
Which happens.
Yeah, I mean, I guess everybody that wrote about it and had, that were aghast, I guess they've never had a flat tire. I guess they never had a car not start.
Again, you know what? It's easy when you're a Monday morning quarterback. It's easy to judge something, particularly if you haven't done it. I mean, those horses are so friggin' strong. They're in a race mode. They're running through the bridle, and you know what? It's not easy to pull one up, especially in that situation. And there's a split-second decision has to be made. Well, do I give the gate crew or the tractor driver another 10 seconds? Well, that 10 seconds, they said it was 35 seconds from when they said, hey, pull up, and then the gate finally got pulled across. Well, another 10 seconds, that's another eighth of a mile you've gone, basically. So now you've gotten less than 3/8 of a mile. You've got a quarter of a mile to get a horse stopped that's in full flight. I'm here to tell you it's not that easy. It's not like, hitting the brakes on a car. They're kind of almost, I won't say blind, but they're so intense on what they're doing at that moment. And a lot of these horses are very, very strong. It's just ridiculous. I get it. It stinks if it costs you money. I get it. I mean, I feel for you. I'd rather you lose, not make money, because you didn't lose money, right? It's a no contest, than some horse running into the starting gate and getting killed and a rider getting killed or, you know, I mean, these things can happen. This is a very seriously dangerous game. And if something goes wrong like that, you know what? Just say thank you to God that nobody got hurt. Everybody's fine. There'll be another day. I'm sorry. And I truly am. I understand people's frustration. You know, but come on, think bigger picture here. We're not looking at it the right way. Now I'll give you quick the funny story. One day I get home from school in Brooklyn, and there was nothing in the house, some bread, and there was mustard in the fridge. So I made a mustard sandwich. I went walking around outside, you know, mindlessly eating my mustard sandwich. There was this lady that lived next door. Her name was Carmela, ironically enough. Should have known I was going to marry a Carmela. She lived there with her five brothers. They immigrated here from Italy. They worked construction, and she took care of the house and, you know, washed their clothes and cooked and everything. And she pops her head out and goes, "What are you eating there?" And mustard sandwich, you know. She goes, "You throw that away. You throw it away right now." So, okay, you come in here. I threw the mustard sandwich away, went in the house. Next thing I know, I'm sitting there with the brothers, pasta fagioli, big crusty bread, right? So it became a game. Anytime I was hungry, I'd quick make a mustard sandwich. I'd walk back and forth in front of her house until she popped her head out. And I think probably by about the fifth or sixth time, she had to know. She had to know. Right? Come in here, and ravioli, this. It was like the best game in town. And I'll never forget her name, Carmela Lucchese.
You got to talk Brooklyn neighborhood and that kind of a story. My father was in, you know, similar circumstance when he and his mother, my grandmother, Mutti, as we call her in German, mother, they were in Bay Ridge, and with my father's uncle Ike at his in a boarding house, and he ultimately made friends with an Italian kid by the name of Chuck Liotta, still alive and lives in San Francisco. And Chuck had I think three brothers and a sister or two, and they took my father in, and he ate dinner there on a regular basis.
People are kind, really. I think the root of it, the majority of people are kind. But I used to get the biggest kick out because, like, you know, looking back on it, I can say she had to know what I was doing. I mean, I literally would just walk back and forth like a guard on duty, you know, until she would come out. "Hey, come on in here." You know, I was, hey, the food was great.
I love it. Rich, a few let me slip in a few performances. I want to get some thoughts because there were a couple of very, very dominant efforts on Saturday and Sunday that need to be discussed. We'll have Aaron Wellman tomorrow to talk about Nest. And Aaron spent the weekend. It was opening weekend at Del Mar, but Aaron Wellman on hand as Eclipse's Nest. That was a tour de force. And then yesterday, Clairière is just that good right now. Talk about the two, the filly race and the filly and mare race.
Hello?
Yeah, we're there.
Steve? Oh, yeah, you dropped out for a second. Yeah, no, listen, Nest was incredible, and, you know, talking with Todd Pletcher about her even before the race, saying how she actually blossomed after the Belmont. You know, a three-year-old filly to run against the boys a mile and a half, and then to actually see her improve from that was very telling to me. She got the right trip. Secret Oath had a tough trip, strung out 4 or 5 wide the entire first term, but it didn't matter. I mean, she was second best on the day. She actually did well, I thought, to persevere to be second. But Nest, that was a breakout performance. And it's funny, you know, we're on set, and we talked about the coaching club, and Lafitte said, "Wow, you think they ever might try the Travers?" So while we're doing the show, bang, I'm on my iPad, look up, you know, seven fillies have won the Travers. Last one was 1915, you know, regret, but Ruthless won it in, you know, 1867 or something. But it's like I quick did all that and looked at it. And, you know, Ruthless is a New York bred, and she won the Belmont Stakes. And the farm that she was born at was over the Throgs Neck Bridge, in Throgs Neck. Now, there was no Throgs Neck Bridge, obviously, back then. There's a plaque in that park commemorating that was her birthplace. That park was the farm. I got out of the car one day looking for it, and I couldn't find it, but I read that it's there, and it's one of those things I got to find one day. Now, probably would be good if I brought a couple big guys with me, but, you know, I was by myself the one day and started getting a little uncomfortable, so I got back in the car and I left. But
which side of the Throgs Neck?
On the Bronx side. There's a park right as you get over the Throgs Neck, like that first exit there to the right. You get off, go down a block. There's a park. It's a pretty big park, and I only explored one side of it.
I know where you
because
mean.
I had read about it. Yeah, man. I wasn't capable of finding it, and then I honestly, it wasn't maybe the best neighborhood for me to be by myself. You know, I'm not a big guy, but yeah. Oh, yeah. How about that? Somebody walked in my house the other day in Saratoga. Excuse me. The guy took my money.
I can tell you from having the occasional, wanderlust or downtown meandering at 2:30, quarter of three. I may have tried a door or two accidentally over the years.
Yeah, it's funny because I was watching something on TV. I fell asleep on the couch like 9:15. About 11, I went to the bedroom. 1 o'clock in the morning, I hear something. So I sat there and listened for a minute and it was kind of quiet, so I said, you know, let me go get a bottle of water. And I stepped out into the hall, and the kitchen's to the left, the living room's to the right, and that's where the front door is. And I hear the front door open. And I must have forgot to lock it, because where I live, we don't lock our doors. I'm in the middle of nowhere, right? So I put my head around the corner, and there's a guy standing there by the front foyer by the living room. I said, like, I won't say what I said, even though it's satellite radio. And, you know, but basically, like, what the hell, you know? And he turned around and took off running. And I'm assuming it's probably what you're saying, that somebody just, you know, had a little too much fun and went to the wrong house.
And I don't know. If he took off running, I mean, my response would usually be, oh, my God, where am I? What did I do? That's tremendous.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, we got such a – and then the race riding that took place with Malafat and Clairière. Clairière was his best. I mean, she overcame a lot, I thought. Joelle tried to force his way out coming off the quarter pole, and Johnny just shut it down completely. And if – you know, Julian didn't drift a little bit where he could get up the fence. I mean, he's going to have to eat her because he was not getting out inside of Johnny. He had to, you know, get through inside the leader. It was a crazy beautiful, right? Go back. You want to see race riding, go back and watch that. That's race riding, not that nonsense of making left-hand turns to go out and bump a horse or, change your horse's direction. You know, the wire's in front of you. The bag of money is in front of you. Hmm. Yeah, you want to, you know, just sidle out a little bit so your horse meets a challenge and joins in with a horse, fine. But I'll never understand people thinking race riding is, you know, taking a 1,000-pound animal and shifting all their weight hard to the left or hard to the right when you're supposed to be going forward. That's not race riding I ever learned.
Rich, before we wrap, too, I do want to slip in, there was Dolce Zell winning the Lake George, and, of course, that basically introduced what became a spectacular weekend for Chad Brown. A lot of it on display, obviously, at Monmouth, and came I don't know, 300 yards from sweeping the five graded stakes, honestly. Some thoughts, particularly about Monmouth and your thoughts about the Haskell. I mean, given how often we talk about the three-year-olds, some conversation on that front.
Well, I honestly think that it's bearing out, and by the end of the three-year-old season, before they start taking on older horses, we're going to realize just how good, how deep this crop is. Cyber Knife's a horse that has shown ability. He's hinted at, like, being able to break through. He's a horse that has a tendency, when he kind of gets there, he wants to pull up a little or hang just a touch. And I'm not trying to compare horses, but I this is what came to my mind. Ferdinand was a horse that would get there and hang a little bit, or if he hit the front, he'd pull up. He didn't do that in the Derby. Why? Well, one, the atmosphere, but two, he got through on the inside, and sometimes that incites a horse to go forward. You know, a horse that pulls up kind of shoots through that gap, and their blood is up, and they'll kind of continue. If they come around and there's a lot to look out there and they can get lost, they'll tend to hang more. Him shooting up the fence, and I still think he idled a little bit when he got about three-quarters length in front and made it, you know, just a little bit closer at the end with Taba. But I thought, you know, that was a perfect example of a three-year-old that has been making that consistent physical development, getting better, maturing. And he's thrown his hat into the ring as a major player. Taba was good. Jack Christopher, he at the end of the day, it's just he probably doesn't want to go that far, and they're going to turn him back in the Allen Jerkins. You know, he's still brilliant. To me, he didn't lose a lot in defeat. He just showed that he might have distance limitations. But the Jim Dandy coming up with, you know, early voting, Zandon, Epicenter, who I almost feel like Epicenter is getting a little overlooked. And maybe I'm crazy, but a lot of the conversations I'm hearing aren't focusing as much on him. And I still think there's a chance at the end of the day he's the one that's the best of this group. I mean, he really unlucky in the Preakness. Ran a great race in the Derby, you know, got picked off by Rich Strike, who, you know, fell into, I honestly think it was the racing gods intervening and decided that, like, that's his day. I've always believed that about some of these big races. There's one with your name on it or there's not. But, you know, with that pace and everything, you got a great ride in the Derby from Joel Rosario, but, you know, if you want to pick it apart, he was moving forward while the race was still hot, and then here comes Rich Strike with the last run, and watching him train in Saratoga, you don't have to even know a lot about horses when you see him train, go, wow, that he's training incredible. And now the Travers, which is always a great race, is always, you know, obviously the Midsummer's Derby is taking on even greater importance because this three-year-old championship is very much up for grabs.
Agreed on all fronts. I will press you on one topic. I'm not convinced after that effort that Jack Christopher, you know, won't see two turns again. I mean, for the first time around two turns, and with, you know, there was pressure, the horse we talked about last week leading into this, that Benevengo had the potential to contribute, you know, the added pace pressure, and that kind of came to pass. But I thought, all things considered, the final analysis here is that Cyberknife had the experience edge and is more of a finished product right this minute, and certainly on Saturday, than Jack Christopher and Taba. That speaks, frankly, Rich, to the idea that, you know, by the time we get to Breeders' Cup, and by the way, I didn't mention on Friday, Santa Anita is getting, the next Breeders' Cup, that long delayed and pretty much, you know, universal expectation. But that came out, of course, the other day. By the time we get to the fall, I think you're 100% right. I mean, this is a nice group. You see a horse like Cyberknife break through the triple-digit buyer scale and so forth. But I think that you really show what we were shown on Saturday with these three horses is that there's a lot to be said for experience and yeah. polishing a diamond.
Well, I think you make a really good point, and not to say that Jack Christopher at some stage won't be able to go further, but yeah, the one thing that I always kind of look at, and it was a little bit of my question, he's got that brilliance. You know, I mean, he's got genuine speed where,
right.
you know, and sometimes to me that doesn't always translate to them, you know, getting a mile and an eighth. Now, again, he missed a lot of training. You know, the winner definitely had more foundation than him. And Tabor did have the benefit of a run at a mile and a quarter, albeit, you know, he's lightly raced as well. So, yeah, I think it's a fair point. I still get the impression that he's going to be, like, terrific up to a mile, and then I have questions.
Fair enough. And on that speed point, the always interesting angle or discussion about trying to rate a horse like that necessarily on the lead, concerned about the two turns. I mean, aren't you better off wheeling and making everybody else chase and gutting them and, you know, hoping, especially on a racetrack like that, where, you know, it's always been a place and specifically a race that has been conducive to stretch out candidates. And undoubtedly that was part of Chad Brown's thinking in pointing him for the Haskell.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And you know how I feel about that. I think you play to horse's strengths. You allow them to use their weapon, and if speed's their weapon, and I learned that from Alan Jerkins. I rated a speed horse, you know, albeit on the lead, a filly that had run in 5 furlongs on the turf. He ran her a mile and eighth on the grass at Hialeah, and I was washing out because I thought she's going to run off and open up 20 lengths. I'm going to look stupid, and I got her to settle on the lead when a half and 50, but the field's on top of me, and then, of course, they ran over me in the stretch, and Alan was screaming at me. You know, I said, but Alan, I got her to slow down. He said, horses have been running away from their enemies for millions of years. I get a jockey who wants to change evolution.
Exactly. That's the greatest quote ever.
Yeah, it opened my mind. Like, oh, wait a second. So, you know, and this is, I've said it on our shows. You're on a speed horse. You've created an advantage. And then you keep sitting there until the closers are within a length of you. Oh, so if I'm a track runner, I'm just going to wait on Dave Waddle and try to outkick him. Come on. You're not going to outkick him.
Exactly. Exactly right. I completely concur. I always point to what I love, the way Louis Saez will you know, let a horse, give a horse the head into the turn, and then as he goes into the turn, spurt away, and now everybody's panic stricken, and his horse has been completely relaxed, freewheeling, and you basically put everybody on their heels, and if somebody comes and catches you, okay, so be it. I thought Jack Christopher acquitted himself really well, and Taba is also an unfinished product, and you know, it, the inverse when it came to Cyberknife, you know, a horse that has needed every start that he's gotten, and you know, was a horse that was headstrong and difficult, and you know, they continue to, you know, to see improvement. It's one of the best parts of the, you know, the featuring of the sophomore season, the, you know, the Triple Crown Trail and the way these horses are in the winter and then into the early spring, the late spring, now summer and fall, and projecting their development curve and understanding it and plugging it into your, you know, your handicapping in particular. So some more lessons taken away from Saturday with the Haskell, and some more opportunities coming up in the Jim Dandy on Saturday as well at Saratoga.
I'm really excited about the Jim Dandy. Yeah, absolutely. Really, and this is why it's the greatest game played outdoors. And we would be remiss not to say what a fantastic ride Florent Drew put on Cyberknife.
Yeah.
So I'll leave you with that. I'm heading back up tomorrow. I'm moderating one of the Jockey Club Roundtable panels tomorrow. So just a quick trip home, but I'll be back up there tomorrow morning.
Outstanding. Rich Migliore, everybody. Mig 4450 on your Twitter, and right there Wednesday on your television as Fox presents Saratoga Live. Let's take our second break of the morning. When we come back, we've got a visit with Kevin Attard, who won the Woodbine Oaks with a scary-looking Ghost Zapper filly. Oh, my, if you didn't see Moira's domination yesterday, she's got to be your favorite for next month's Queen's Plate. Plate trial or anybody waiting in the wings? I don't know. Moira looks like a monster. Back after this, Hour 3, Kevin Attard joins us. Johnny D ahead as well. Stay with us. Not sure, Case, if you want me to come back in, if that's because I didn't hear anything. So if go on with it or what? You tell me. There we go. I guess. You want to take the break? There we go.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule and average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carry.